And this is program number 637, and it's February the 20th, 1984. I don't usually make local announcements when I do the World Watcher because these tapes go east, but this I'm going to put on the air now because the broadcast just got up in the Bay Area 1 week later. I am going up to De Anza College to be with the women there. There's a Women's History Week, a very interesting program all week, Monday through Friday, and on March the 8th, a couple of weeks from now, on Thursday, March the 8th, I'm going up there from 10:30 to 12. The address is 280 Stevens Creek Boulevard off of Highway 280 in the Student Council Chambers. I'll be up there. If there's some of you that want to drive along with me, get up early in the morning and go up to De Anza College from the local area here, we can go up together and meet some of the people up there. There's a good listening audience of people that follow World Watchers every week. And so once in a while, I get out and do this. It's hard to do. I set a date that I agreed upon, and I don't think any date is a good date because things are always busy. Speaking of busy, just to show you what busy really is in terms of taking 10 papers a day in magazines and clippings and the broadcast and writing, getting Rain Out and Knuckle Down and finalize that Granada story. I had my copying machine fixed, some paper stuck in it this week, and they asked me, what number do you have? I got a new copying machine in December, and it has the number like the other one, so you know how many copies you've made. I got about December the 15th or 18th, so that they know when they repair it what else it needs if something is broken down. And I looked at the number, and in 2 months, the number of copies was 10,205. That is just not a business or an office. That's Mae Brussel at home, answering mail, copying articles, retrieving sheets for people of past broadcasts, and some of the current sheets that go out with the tapes since the last 2 months. I've been doing it at home because it copies both sides. But just the mechanics of doing that and answering the mail, that's why I say if you write to me, send self-addressed stamped envelope or large envelopes. But just the fact that I open the mail and proceed to pull stuff out of the files and copy it and then put it back and copy articles and maybe file them in two or three places, that is a lot of busy work. A lot of people don't know how much it takes to keep up with what I'm doing. I try to answer every letter of people who write to me, and eventually I do that. It's very important that I don't get any larger than the people that I can keep in touch with. There's some people that have wanted to multi-copy these tapes down in L.A. and back east and make a real production, but then I lose control of knowing people who subscribe or knowing the people who the other people subscribe are sending it to and corresponding and answering my telephone and answering these calls and talk shows. So it's busy time, and just leaving the house for one day, it's hard. But I'm going to do that. I'll go up there and meet these people. So if you want to go, that's a week from Thursday on the 8th. Now to the subject of the program of this week. Going back, we always begin with what happened a year ago. Tonight, what were we talking about? That was February 21st, 1983. Broadcast number 585. I was going into a continuation of the important Vatican scandals with the arrest in Banco Ambrosiano of the largest gun-running narcotics operation out of the bank of Roberta Calvi in Milan just last November and December. More pieces of evidence of the international links of the Mafia, the CIA, the Vatican, and Nazis and death squads were coming together. The news was just gushing out, and that's what we were talking about last year. And also Charles Blue Dorn, the head of Gulf and Western, died. A very important story, and I did several broadcasts to follow up Gulf and Western because of its links to Ronald Reagan and the Vatican and the crime syndicate again. And Klaus Barbie, the butcher from Lyon, the Nazi head of the Gestapo, was brought from Bolivia to France. It's been a year. He hasn't been tried yet. And then his links to the CIA were opening up, and again to the Vatican and to the death squads in South America that he set up, and the Nazi death squads. So he was one example of what I was trying to show through the past years of the gun running, the narcotics, the CIA, the Nazis, and the death squads all together. And Claus Barbie personified them, and he not only personified them, but he worked with Henry Kissinger from as Cocaine King in Bolivia and also up in Oberammergau after the war, before Kissinger went to Harvard and before Barbie went to Bolivia. And I believe every day, if you read your newspapers, every item that has to do with something horrendous goes back to Henry Kissinger, Fritz Kramer, and Alexander Haig. And Kramer and Kissinger, again, were the links to Barbie before he began the death squads in the South. And I was talking about God's banker, Roberta Calvi. God's other banker was in America. He's in jail, this Michael Sindona. But there was a broadcast of Jessica Savage on Frontline just a year ago this week called God's Banker. You can send for that. I had the sheet on the broadcast last year. Frontline, I'm sure they still have it. Box 322, Boston, Massachusetts, 02134. Send $4 and get Jessica Savage talking about Roberta Calvi. And in the broadcast, she's talking about a Mr. Silvani Vitor, a smuggler who was with Calvi, Francesco Paziana, the last flight that he took, Paziana arranged for Calvi, and Mr. Flavio Carboni and Silvano Vitor were very important to the death of Calvi, and Mr. Paul Marcinkus and Paziana. These names I give to you that I had on the air last year are very, very important. That was some broadcasts that just flow, interlink, most of them do, to each other from the past and into the future. And this was one of these that was a very important broadcast of Licio Gelli and Robert Armao, A-R-M-A-O, of the Pahlavi Foundation and President of the Vatican Foundation. Again, bringing in the links to Henry Kissinger and John McCloy and Nelson Rockefeller and the Shah of Iran. And I talked about the Vatican connections and some more part three on John McCloy from Harper's Magazine. Now, that was a year ago that I was doing that continuous series. This week, I got a gift from a friend here in Carmel at the bookstore, a new book, In Bankers We Trust. And this was published, Anchor Press. It just came out, Doubleday, 1984. Penny Lernoux wrote the book, L-E-R-N-O-U-X. Now, on the cover of her book that is in the bookstores right now, this is the way it reads. It sounds like it's right off of May Brussels, but this is how far we've come now with the news media having these things right on the cover. You couldn't say these things. 3 years ago, I was taken off of KGO almost forever to talk about Vatican funds. This is the cover. Bankers and their close associates, the CIA, the mafia, the drug traders, the dictators, politicians, and the Vatican. In Bankers We Trust. And in this book, I haven't read all of it. I've just glanced through it. And one chapter was so pertinent to what I was talking about a year ago tonight that I wanted to mention it to you. There is a very good map, and she has charts of Luxembourg and Liechtenstein and Milan and Rome, and then down to the Bahamas, Miami and Nassau, and over to Australia and the Nugenhan Bank. There are diagrams and charts. On page 175, she talks about Claus Barbie and his friend SS Colonel Frederick Schwend. Remember, we talked about him a few weeks ago on World Watcher? SS Colonel Frederick Schwend, S-E-H-W-E-N-D. I knew he was involved with the Operation Bernhardt and the forging of $100 million for the Nazis and the Odessa after the war. But I didn't know that he was, or I didn't remember that he was an SS colonel, an officer for Adolf Hitler. And in this book, she talks about Claus Barbie, who's a friend of SS Colonel Frederick Schwend, a leader in the Nazi escape organization, the Odessa. I keep referring to the spider web, the Odessa. And it tells how they worked, Schwend and Barbie, with Hugo Banzer, that's the cocaine king, and the cocaine traffic down in Bolivia, and Barbie's trips to Miami and the Miami group. Now, Schwend is very important. I got out E. Howard Hunt's book, Give Us This Day, and maybe next week I'm going over the portions with you, that because the great heroine coup suggests that Schwend is was at the Bay of Pigs and with the overthrow in Guatemala a few years before that with E. Howard Hunt and that gang. And I mentioned on the radio that Schwend worked with Frank Sturgis, who had been in Germany. But when I read Give Us This Day, and I hadn't read it for maybe 8 years, I didn't realize that E. Howard Hunt was in the OSS when the OSS had the Nazis in there, and that E. Howard Hunt went to Germany, where he picks up Mr. Schwend, who goes under the other name of Bender. But if they're the same person, if Schwend is Bender, that is one of the most horrendous stories. And he was living in Washington, if this is true, and kept a Miami and New York telephone that if you called either number, it automatically transferred to Washington so that, for all purposes, nobody knew where he was. But if it is the same person, if it's not the same person, it still matters where he came from, Germany, because he came with his own communication system, and we'll go into that. But if it is the same person, he worked with Mr. Tracy Barnes and Alan Dulles of the CIA right in Washington, D.C., planning these various coups. And I have some horrendous stories to tell you about him. Now, getting back to this book, the chapters read like this: from Chase Manhattan's basement to a storefront in Oklahoma shopping center. Chapter 2, The Arrogance of the Citibank and How to Hoodwink the Regulators. Chapter 3, Criminal Infiltrators and Bank Robberies. Chapter 4, The Nugent Hand Bank in Australia, Murder and the Good Old Boys of the CIA. Chapter 5, Florida's Bent Bankers, the CIA, the Mobsters, and the Offshore Havens. Those are the ones that Sir Eric Gehry worked all along with before and while he arranged the murder of Maurice Bishop. Chapter 6, Miami, the Port of Entry for Cocaine and Marijuana. Doesn't this sound like Mae Brussel? Latin American Terrorists, Cuban Colombian Drug Merchants, the Country's Most Fear-Haunted City, Miami. Chapter 7, Florida, the Dope Smugglers, the Related Villains Need Laundries and Their Cartons of Cash, How Easy It Is for a Crook, particularly an Alien Crook, to Buy an Entire Bank. Chapter 8, The World Finance Corporation Tax Evasions Abetted by the CIA, Our Own Government, Right-Wing Terrorists and Arab Potentates. She has Castro in here, but most of the people, all of them, were anti-Castro Cubans. Chapter 9, Razzle-Dazzle Banking Reaches the Vatican, as Archbishop Marcinkus involves the Holy City, the Sicilian Mafia, also the Milan Mafia, Latin American death squads, an example of the high cost of credibility. And then the Vatican, chapter 10, the Vatican resists its creditors, throws a chill into the world banking, and that goes into the Vatican. And then chapter 11, Ronald Reagan rides to the rescue with taxpayers' money. And that is the table of contents of that book. Now, chapter 9 and 10, at the end of each chapter, she has what she calls the Rogues Gallery. She's got names here that I had on just a year ago tonight in this particular chapter, and other ones I've had on the broadcast. Mr. Paglia, P-A-G-L-I-A-I, hard to pronounce. He was part of the P2 Masonic Lodge that was shot in Bolivia and died when he went to Rome before he could go to jail. Stephanie Della Chiaie, C-H-I-A-I-E, the Black Pimpernel, he's called. Now, Della Chiaie is the one who's involved with the Bologna bombing, with Henry Kissinger, with the Monte Carlo Lodge, with Klaus Barbie. And it said he's a colleague of Michael Townley, who masterminded the assassination of Orlando Letelier, the former Chilean ambassador. Della Chiaie is one of the most dangerous men in the world, who fled Bolivia when Klaus Barbie was arrested. He worked with George Bush of the Central Intelligence Agency. When Bush was here 2 years ago, I was handing out pamphlets at the DoubleTree Hotel here, linking him to the Orlando Letelier murder as the director of the CIA, and even more. I'll go back and put that on the air. This is a dangerous man who worked also with Harry W. Schlottemann, who has now been recommended as the head of all Central America this past week, the butcher. These guys quartered people alive down at Colonia Dignidad in Chile. They are the most horrendous torturers and killers. And I'll read you some of the tortures that were described in a newspaper last week from people down there that they did. This chapter 9 and 10 of that book goes into Luis Arce Gomez, the Bolivian colonel, the cocaine king who worked with Barbie and Della Chai. Klaus Barbie, they have him as the former Gestapo chief down there with Della Chai and Pagliai. Mr. Fiegelborn, remember the broadcast? Joachim Fiegelborn, a German Nazi terrorist who worked with Barbie and Della Chai down in Bolivia representing the Frankfurt government, and all of them were involved in the Bologna Railroad Station bombing. They've got Jose Lopez Rega, the hatchet man who formed the three A's, the Argentine Anti-Communist Alliance. Broadcast 610, I had on him. Valerio, the black Prince Borghese. That's from Permandex Corporation that worked with Clay Shaw that I wrote about in my Rebel article on the Nazis and the John Kennedy assassination of Permandex. Michael Sindona, the head of the Mafia and the Vatican, the Mafia connected God's banker with the Masonic Lodge. Roberta Calvi's here. Licio Gelli, the Grand Master of the Fascist Lodge, the Nazi collaborator during World War II. Withdrawing $60 million from a Swiss bank. He was caught the day before Grace Kelly died. Gelli was caught taking $60 million out of a numbered bank belonging to Roberta Calvi. He was put in a Swiss prison and then walked out. Admiral Emilia Massaro is part of this, of the Argentine military junta, wanted now for murder and torture in Argentina. Gulf and Western is in this chapter along with these people. All of this I had 1 year ago tonight. The death, you see, just when this stuff was coming out in the news a year ago, conveniently, Mr. Bluedorn of Gulf and Western dies. Charged by Security and Exchange engaging in stock manipulation with Michael Sindona. That's Mr. Bluedorn of Gulf and Western. Peter Shattuck, the former vice president of Continental Illinois. This week, the Continental Illinois is linked, and it was always, to Mr. Mark Rich, who owns 50% of 20th Century Fox and Pebble Beach. The Continental Illinois is involved in with Marvin Davis, with John DeLorean, with the Rockefeller Nazi links, with the Mormon Nazi links, with Sindona, with Mr. David Kennedy, who's the one of the top elders of the Mormon Church, and with the Tylenol murders. All have to do, those are the kettles of fish, the deaths, not the banking scandal. She's writing about the banking scandals, and I'm following the corpses, and they fit together very nicely. She has Gulf and Western and Mr. Shattuck from Continental Illinois and William Arrico. Remember, that guy was picked up outside of Bucks County in Pennsylvania right after the former president of Lockheed and his wife were murdered. And a few weeks later, Grace Kelly was murdered, and Arrico was living in Pennsylvania. He'd left an American jail. He worked with Michael Sindona in liquidating people in Italy, the God's banker. Mr. Manini, one of the managers of the Vatican Bank, is in this chapter, and Archbishop Paul Marcinkus. These are just names from one chapter that she has a gallery similar to the kind of work I do. She's got graphs and galleries. Mr. General Vito Michelli from the Central Intelligence Agency, who's the liaison of the neo-fascist Italian socialist movement. That's not socialist pro-labor. That's Nazi the fascist, okay? This is, Michelli is the liaison of, like Clay Shaw, Alan Dulles, the CIA, to the Black Prince, the Borghese's. That name is in this chapter. And Silvano Vitor, that I mentioned a year ago tonight, who accompanied Calvi to London, and Flavio Carboni, the businessman, the associate of Calvi, the mafia connections linked to the Mussolini, Gestapo army, and the Hitler army in Italy, and Carboni's in here, Vittori, Mr. Ortolani, the Italian businessman, Licio Gelli's alter ego, who is now in Brazil, has holdings in Paraguay, and Mr. Wieser, that I mentioned also a year ago tonight. What she has in one chapter here, just or chapter 9 and 10, on the banking. In Banks We Trust, Penny Lanoue has the names that I had 1 year ago tonight on a broadcast, trying to make some sense for you out of all this chaos. Now, I'm pretty proud of the work I've been doing. This is my 13th year, and you have to take the tapes week after week. I think it would be almost impossible to understand these names, and those of you that listen and those of you that tape it off the air or subscribe to the tapes can get a running account of where these people fit in, how they connect, say, to John Conley or to George Bush or to current murders, or the murder of Orlando Letelier and Ronnie Moffitt. And what I try to do is to take them and give them a location and a place, and she has their names there. Then, of course, there's Juan Perón, the Argentine dictator. That's Chapter 9 and 10, her rogues gallery. Now, in June 1982, a few months after these stories were breaking, they were just in 1983 is when, a year ago tonight, I was talking about these things. But in June 82, a year earlier, I said there is a very important week where all of these people come together. And it has a lot of meaning. It's one of the most important weeks of all my research because of the connections of Ronald Reagan. See, Licio Gelli was at the inauguration. Michael Sindona funded Richard Nixon before him. And a year before, when Calvi was killed and hung in London, that is when the banking world really went bananas. So for 1 year, from June 82 to 83, I was detailing, and then up from 83 to 84. But when the Vatican banker representing the president of the biggest bank in Italy, the Bank Ambrosiano, and with the scandals breaking, was hung in London, the money tightened up and caused a lot of consequences to people all over who you wouldn't know were linked or may not know why there were murders around them. The mafia had their money tangled, and then right after that, it turned out the Vatican had their $1.2 billion down in Panama. So money was tied up that couldn't transfer, couldn't be given out. There were payments to be made, and a lot of people were scrambling to cover their bases. Now, this is this leads to a very important subject, because in June of 62, when Calvi was murdered, and I chronicled it all that time, say, up to the present, something was going on in June 62 that, if we follow it properly, could affect our future as important as the Watergate story when Nixon was kicked out of office at the time of the Watergate scandals. And it has to do with Edwin Meese III and his financial problems that I believed then and I believe now tangle into that can of worms, because the position of Reagan recognizing the Vatican, which was pretty outrageous, and the way that Nixon and Reagan have played with the Vatican since the 70s, when Paul Marcinkus was forging documents and stocks and working with Claire Luce and John Connolly and the CIA and the Defense Department, those tangled webs of what went on in Italy and in the United States that affect us in terms of fascist decisions and laws here are very important. And the scandals of these people have to be opened up and laid directly at their door, so that in some way they lose their power over us, because they have too much power and they got it illegally, and now they have forced many banks to close and financial scandals beside. Now, there were two articles pertaining to Ronald Reagan and his administration this week that may be very subtle, that you may not have even seen that passed you, that have a place in this time slot with what we were talking about a year ago, 2 years ago, and up to the current time with his new book coming out. One article is called Reagan's Backers to End 1980s Case. Now, that looks innocent enough, except that Jeff Gerth wrote it. When Jeff Gerth writes, or Seymour Hersh writes, you better read every word and save it. It's from the New York Times, February the 18th. This is an article that Reagan's Political Action Committee, called the Citizens for the Republic, was receiving money from payments from 1980 campaign, and they are asked now to pay civil penalties for past charges. They will not tell who put money into the Reagan till. The Federal Election Committee has been after them, and now that the next election is coming up, they want to settle this case by paying a $5,000 fee. But I never knew this thing was pending. Maybe you know more than I know. Ronald E. Robertson, the attorney, represents Ronald Reagan and Ronald Reagan's committees that Reagan set up. He set up himself some fancy committees identical to the kind of Watergate things that Richard Nixon got caught in. Now, this Robert Robertson is in charge of several banks, and he works with raising, no, he raises, I take back the bank part, that is jumping ahead. He raises money for Ronald Reagan's committees. He's one of the big fundraisers, and he also has an appointment as a delegate to the UN, a federal appointment besides raising money. They set up these two organizations, there may be more, and Edwin Meese had a central role in refusing to answer the subpoenas about the money going into these organizations. One is the Citizens for the Republic. That was closed in 1982. That was one of the dummy fronts with money coming in. And they subpoenaed Edwin Meese. This is before he was nominated as Attorney General. He would not answer the subpoena. He said he was too busy. And there was a lawsuit. They had to file a suit in court to say that Reagan was receiving illegal payments, and Mr. Meese, the counsel of the president, ignored them. That would make a good attorney general. His personal financial statement at the time showed that in 2 years preceding the 1980 elections, his main source of income were fees from Ronald Reagan's Political Action Committee and fees from the Reagan campaign. Reagan what ran in 1980 and won in November of 80. But Edwin Meese has two missing years there. He's going to be our attorney general. And it would be nice to see his passport to see whether he traveled and whether he was at Rome or with Sindona or Calvi, Angeli, these various characters, because his sole income, here's a man who is supposed to have some kind of a status or be working or practicing law or doing something. His sole source of income was from these committees. And the Political Action Committee and the 1980 Reagan Presidential Committee, both of them were represented in suits. They were presented, taken to lawsuits. And Mr. Robertson has been trying to settle this up. The telegrams weren't answered by Meese. There were delays. He wouldn't answer subpoenas. Now, what would Edwin Meese, for the 3 years that he's been the advisor to the president, not answer any questions on where the money came from for these two particular committees? March the 4th, 1980, Meese failed to return any phone calls. Reagan was elected in, as I say, November 80, but Meese wasn't taking any calls, and they filed a suit. The Citizens for the Republic was founded in 1977 by Reagan and Meese, and from 1978 to 80, I guess he drew a salary there. And at the same time, they had another foundation, the CFTR Education and Research Foundation, that was later named the New American Foundation. There also is a foundation for Edwin Meese in San Francisco, whose sole purpose is to cover up the news. So in this one article, Ed Meese had 2 years just working, drawing money from the Reagan campaign and not answering about illegal funds into the campaign, and not accounting for what he did those 2 years. Now, another story following that, just February the 19th, the Los Angeles Times. Personal finances may hurt the Edwin Meese confirmation. Now we're getting to the nitty-gritty, like the Watergate story. In 1982, Edwin Meese owed nearly $483,000 in personal loans. In May of 82, the same time that Licio Gelli is fleeing to London and is to be killed, when he has to get out of Italy, when the links of the Masonic Lodge to the Vatican, to the Republican Party, to the Nazis in South America, to the death squads in South America, the whole narcotics traffic thing, just at the time that's just about to be completely exposed, the P2 scandal began to be exposed in 1981, just the week that the Pope was shot and 2 months after Reagan was shot. And for a year, they were looking for these funds from 1981, from March and May 81 up to 82. And in June 82, Calvi was hung in London, they have the Bank Ambrosiano. But the important thing is that how would Edwin Meese owe $483,000? There has to be mafia connections. Now, down in San Diego, he got this money from banks. Now, those are the San Diego areas, La Costa, Senator Pete Wilson, the mafia, the links of Mo Dalitz to Mr. Paul Laxalt. The point is that Meese has enough contacts in Reagan to cover that paltry $400,000. That has to be an investment in something that didn't come through because the scandals locked it up. There's a bigger story here. I'll continue on Meese in 1 minute. We'll take a 1 minute break. Now,